Bonjour, and welcome to the Amateur Detective Club. This club is exactly how it sounds. A bunch of amateurs talking about their favorite mysteries. So if you encounter a real mystery or a murder, contact the proper authorities. Do not come to us. We do not know what we are doing. But enjoy the program. Allons-y. Let us begin.
Typical man behavior. No. I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to order. My name is Tristan Miller, the Saucy Sleuth.
I'm Melissa Maley, the Spy.
Join us at scavengersnetwork.com. You can go to scavengersnetwork.com to check out our podcast episode. A lot of other podcast episodes. They're all over the place there. They got streams. Less so now. We should talk to Colin about that.
Maybe bring streams back.
Yeah, maybe bring. Yeah, hashtag bring streams back. bring streams back. All right. So you could go there. You can go to patreon.com/ADCpod. We try to post the episodes early when we can. We have a bunch of bonus content, and hopefully we'll get better about that as well. Yeah. So you can do those two things if you want. That's it. That's all I have to say. Melissa.
Wonderful. You can find us on social media at ADCpod.
I think you mean social media. Hercules.
That's
Hercules.
Right, I do. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. I know.
Medea, I think of the Euripides.
Yep, I knew you would. That's the one I went first. And then I was like, you know, it'd be funny if I played a quick prank on Melissa by referencing Tyler Perry, someone who is in the first Star Trek movie that no one likes to talk about.
Oh.
Yeah, he's one of the judges. Anyway.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the first Star Trek movie.
Well, the J.J. Abrams one.
No, I have seen that.
I was like, you
forgot about that.
You must have.
Yes, I have.
So
indeed.
So you can find us on social media.
At ADCpod. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're on those three.
That's it.
And it's all the same.
It's also all the same.
The tag is, you know. There's more pictures on Instagram.
That, generally speaking, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
More,
it's like the whole thing.
More Columbo content on the Twitter as well. There's a wider net I cast on the Twitter.
Yeah.
Posting memes, retweeting the Agatha Christie account.
Yeah. It's very exciting.
We're going to have to cover Death on the Nile pretty soon.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, boy.
We are. All of our... David Suchet stans are going to hate that.
Also, everyone who hates Gal Gadot, Armie Hammer, Letitia Wright, also.
Oh my goodness.
There's all three of them are in that movie, yeah.
A disaster cast.
Oh no. And it all happened so quickly for all three of them. That everyone turned on them. Oof, ba-boof. So today, we're talking about Star Trek again. Listen, if you hate this, I'm sorry. We're going to do at least like three other episodes of Star Trek. So just so you the listener, you can, if you don't like Star Trek, don't have any interest in it, this is what we're doing for a little bit. So get used to it, I guess.
We'll be back with your regularly scheduled program.
Oh, I was thinking it and I'm glad you said it, but oh, it pains me.
I just felt the presence of Tyler Riley as I said it. I think Tyler would be proud.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But yeah, we'll get back to Poirot soon. And also maybe other stuff. We'll see. We'll have fun. We're still doing, like, this is still a Sherlock themed episode, so it's still at least mystery adjacent.
Yeah. Listen, it's all part of the brand.
Yeah, we're almost playing Calvin Ball.
I don't know that.
Almost.
Calvin Ball.
Okay. So are you aware of Calvin and Hobbes?
Yeah.
Do you know the game they play, Calvin Ball?
No.
They play a game called Calvin Ball where you just make up the rules as you go.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And that's wild that you... Because Griffin specifically, McElroy, will specifically say if things are getting too wild when they're talking, they'll be like, okay, he goes, we're playing Calvin Ball here. We have to like rein it in. And he specifically said it. The reason it came out of my mouth is because of the naming of the year episode. He says it. And I was like, oh, right. That's a good idiom.
It is good. I guess they say so much in that show.
They do. They talk a lot, if you can believe it.
And some of it just goes over my head, and I'm used to that. So.
Would you call yourself a trekker?
Probably not the words I would choose.
Okay, so no is the answer that you gave me, but... But you said no, but not that there's anything wrong with that, is what you just
said. Right. Like, if someone called me a trekker, I wouldn't be upset about it. I would say Trekkie before I'd say trekker.
Oh, so I have specifically avoided Trekkie because of the derogatory nature of the term. But
taking it back, baby.
Okay. You heard it here, folks. I wouldn't, because I like Star Trek and I've seen the show, like specifically TNG, more than once, but I would never in a million years call myself a Trekkie or a Trekker or even a fan of Star Trek, which is wild. I would say I like Star Trek, right? I don't know.
I mean, okay, we're really splitting hairs with I'm a fan of and I like.
Well, yeah.
I think those two things are like generally similar. Roughly the same term.
They certainly are now. They certainly are now. But I would also say I don't universally like Star Trek. Like, we've had this discussion before. I like the three main ones from the 80s and 90s, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a very it scratches a very specific itch for me. But
sure.
I like two of the three films that came out recently. I thought those were good. But yeah, in general, like I would say I like Star Trek. I don't think it's not an active enough pursuit. Does that make sense? I need to shut the hell up because I do have an alt Twitter account that's Kalis. So like I should probably just, you know. So follow at the real Kalis, by the way. That's me. And I've returned. For those of you who don't know, Kalis is Klingon Jesus, and I thought it would be funny to grab the handle before someone else did.
It is funny.
And I will tweet so sparingly, but when I do, people eat it up.
Yeah.
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 One
How
of,
many followers do you have on that account?
Oh, like, I don't remember. Not in the thousands, surely. But enough. Like, when I put effort into it, I get a fair amount. But my friend Hattie Hayes tweeted something which is like, how come in Star Trek it's to boldly go where no man has gone before, and then when they go there's always like some guy there? And I retweeted it from that account because I was like, I kind of want to see what happens when Star Trek fans get a hold of this one. And it blew up and it did very well, and the funniest thing on the face of the planet happened because someone responded to the tweet with, ah yes, I remember when Merv Griffin said this on her show. And Hattie responded with, like, yep, I steal all my tweets from the Merv Griffin show. And it was she just absolutely bodied that person. It was so good.
Oh, yeah. Wow, this is a...
Oh, you pulled up the tweet, did you?
I did.
There's a lot of response.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she asked sort of rhetorically, why did this blow up? And I was like, number one, it's a very funny thing. But also, I did retweet it from a Star Trek fan account I run. And I think people got upset with
you. I mean, you don't have that many followers on this account.
No, I really don't. So if you're listening to this episode specifically, hey, you know, what the hell? Follow me there if you like Star Trek.
Follow at the real Kalis.
And I have returned. It's very funny. Yeah. So I had to walk back the whole I like Star Trek because I don't know. It's like everything I've absorbed. It's okay. The reason it feels different is because I came to it as an adult, whereas like Star Wars is such a takes me immediately back to being like 8 when I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Star Trek, I first watched when I was like 24.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, yes, I can understand this conceptually. I don't know. It just feels different. So I don't have that same verve for it. But if you ask me questions about it, certainly I know things about the lore. I mean, mm-hmm. Kalis, for Christ's sakes.
Had you seen any episodes when you were a kid? Or
when I was a kid, yes. Growing up, they would play them on rerun. And I would tune in. And I wanted to like it because I really liked Foxtrot growing up, the comic book strip.
Okay, uh-huh.
And I really identified with Jason, who's the youngest of 3 and is annoying and likes Star Wars and Star Trek and superheroes and this sort of thing. And I never was really into the superhero thing. But I really wanted to, I wanted to give Star Trek a go because mm-hmm. I was like, this feels like I should like it, right?
Okay.
But I started with Star Trek the Motion Picture, which,
okay,
if you've seen any of, is an egregious film, in quotes. It's not done very well. Specifically, contrasting that with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there in Star Trek the Motion Picture, there's a lot of, like, talking, and the sets aren't very good, and, you know, all of this slowly turning into Werner Herzog. The sets, they're not as good as they might have been. And so coming from that, and there's not as much action. So as a kid, I was kind of bored by it. But I would watch every once in a while, TNG would be on, and I'd have a crack at it. And mostly because Riker looks like a Star Wars character named Kyle Katarn. And in my mind, I imprinted those two characters together.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
What about you?
I had seen, like, snippets of episodes here and there. My godmother's husband loves Star Trek, and he would be, I remember him watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm pretty sure I saw the part of, at least a good part of the weird Tasha Yar, spoiler alert for the first season of TNG, where Tasha Yar dies and they have the tar monster.
What is that called? That monster, what is it called?
I don't remember. But yeah, because I, when that episode came on, I was like, oh yeah, this is very familiar. I remember this guy. It loomed much larger in my knowledge of, like, in my memory of what Star Trek was about
mm-hmm.
than it should have.
Armus is the name of it. It's called Skin of Evil.
Skin of Evil. Gross. By the way.
Nasty. Nasty. I was obsessed with the La Brea tar pits as a kid, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, to the point where, like, I had dinosaur toys and I, like, mixed a bunch of paint together. And my mom will always bring this up whenever I talk to her. If I'm with my mom for more than 4 days, she'll bring it up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I mixed a bunch of paints together to make my own La Brea tar pits for my dinosaur. And she, like, was like, I made a huge mess. And she's like, you know this isn't going to come off, right? And I was like, what? And I got really upset by it, you know, because mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I don't want to change my toys. And so we had to, like, wash it off real quick. And, like, it was a huge to do, but I made this massive mess and spilled all paint. Because, like, I don't know if you know this, tar is a hard substance to try and recreate.
Yeah.
And not knowing that water dilutes paint.
Right.
The thickness. So I was like, I want a lot of it, so I'm going to put it in water. And so I was, like, kept adding more and more and more. It was, like, awful. But perfect, like, 5-year-old logic. So let's talk about the thing we're supposed to talk about, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So it starts out and something happens where Lieutenant Reginald Barclay has to go take a look at the holodeck for some reason, right?
Okay. So we open. So we're talking about season six, episode 12 of Star Trek The Next Generation, which is called Ship in a Bottle, which is a really interesting callback to the last episode, which had a big model ship.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't really have to do anything with that. I mean, it does have to do with the last episode, but not the ship.
It's
right. Coincidence.
Yeah.
Coincidence. So we open on Data and Geordi as Sherlock and Watson in the holodeck running a Sherlock Holmes program and Data solving a moida.
Right.
Yep. And he makes an accusation of the guy. And Data gets it wrong.
Yeah.
He says he's left-handed when he's actually holding something with his right hand.
Yeah.
So, what the heck's going wrong?
Well, good for the person for not going to hell because they're left-handed.
I know.
Remember when we all believed that?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, so he gets it wrong and he goes, rather than Data accepting maybe he got something incorrect, he's like, well, something must be wrong with the program. And I've been like, I've been there, Data.
Yeah.
Get deep into that denial.
But Reginald Barclay comes by and says, hey, I hear that there's something wrong. Now, Reginald Barclay.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
He is a weirdo. Great character.
Mm-hmm.
We met him a few episodes previous, meaning like previously in a few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And like he's very socially awkward, but they've kind of figured out how to get him to a point where he's actually a really useful, wonderful crew member.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the guy who plays him sucks in real life. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand it, but a great character, does a great job as the character.
Yeah, he does. I'll say this as
he's
well.
He's also on the A team.
He is, isn't he? I'll say this as well about the character of Lieutenant Reginald Barclay.
Mm-hmm.
At one point he had a holodeck addiction.
Oh my god, that's the first episode he's
exactly, and it made me think, like, why are you sending Barclay to, I mean, I guess he knows the holodeck better than anybody else because he's so horny for it, but like like literally horny for it though is the thing.
Yeah.
But like, why would you, that would be like, okay, alcoholic, please go to the bar for me and fix something. Like, it seems like bad news to me.
Well, I mean, I guess they just have that much faith in his recovery.
I guess. But anyway, he shows up.
And Data's like, something is clearly wrong with the holodeck because I couldn't solve this.
I couldn't possibly be wrong.
And he is actually finding some weird anomalies.
Yeah.
It's really in those that are in protected memory. And then he sees all this stuff about Moriarty.
Yeah.
And he asks the computer to unlock this program. And just on the holodeck, you see our good friend
Daniel Davis reprising his role as Professor James Moriarty.
Yeah.
And he is pissed. Because he's like, hey, what year is it, basically? Because sometimes I remember time passing, and it's been a long time that I've been in the computer. And they work out that he's been in storage for about 4 years.
Right.
Which is so long.
It's so long. So it's in keeping with the last time
we
left our heroes, yeah.
Which I think is great because he gets very justifiably angry with Picard of like, you said you're conceptually, he's not talking with Jean-Luc, but he's like, they said they were going to help me out and it's been 4 years. You really couldn't do anything, you dumb dummies.
Yeah.
And Reg can't believe that the whole situation that has occurred in the previous episodes that we've covered, and he does a great job of naturally demanding exposition from Moriarty.
Yes, exactly.
There's a lot of that in this, which makes sense because, like, at a certain point, you're assuming that people aren't... Because there was no going back to the previous episode when it was airing.
Right, right.
I don't think they were in syndication yet, so...
Oh, yeah, probably not. So, so they're rehashing this whole thing. And I mean, even for the folks who have seen it, it's been 4 years.
Oh, so, for sure.
Yeah. So he says, all right, I want to see Jean-Luc Picard. Get me the captain.
And Reg is like, how do you know there's a captain? And he's like, we've just get him here.
Yeah, for the exactly.
Love of crap. We go to the title screen, right? And then Jean-Luc shows up and talks to Moriarty.
Yes, indeed.
And basically, Jean-Luc shrugs his shoulders like, well, we tried our best. I sent it off to some scientists back at Earth, and they'll... We don't know.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. And he's like, but you're right. I mean, listen... We did bad. Let's try and solve this.
Yeah, what can we do now?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a great moment where he goes, Professor, I understand your frustration. He goes, but do you though? And that's a great, like, hey, you have no concept of what it was like to sometimes be alive and then not other times.
Right. Yeah.
And
so basically he asks him to show, he asks Picard to show him around and to get off the holodeck and show him around.
Yeah. And Picard's like, we can't do that. That's not possible. And he throws a book out the door to demonstrate this.
And it disappears.
And then James is like, well, I'm going to try anyway, because if I'm not allowed to leave, I might as well not be alive.
Well, I mean, yeah, he says, listen, I am alive. Mm-hmm. I understand that how this works, but that's not how I work.
Yeah.
So I'm going to prove you wrong.
Oh, I have a couple notes about this episode. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Jean-Luc is in his amazing captain jacket.
Yes.
They finally gave him a good outfit. For once.
The TGG people call it his action jacket.
Yes. It's very good. That's the first note that I have. And then during this conversation with James, he goes, I think therefore I am. And that made me think of a question for you. What is a soul? a while ago, Melissa was in a show. I was in a show that Melissa was producing a while ago, and we were doing the table read, and we're doing icebreakers, and we were, you know, turn to your left and ask your somebody a question, and they always got, you know, what's your favorite color, what's your, you know, favorite play, blah 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 blah. I turn to the person next to me, and I'm like, supposing God is real, is he all powerful or all good? Because he can't be both. And the do you remember this at all?
Oh my gosh, yes, vividly.
And everyone was so mad at me. I'm like, you all are boring. I don't care what a color is. They're all fake anyway, because we all see different colors. My gosh. Don't get me started about relativism. Anyway, so what is a soul? Do animals have souls? Do people have souls? How do you know you are?
Yep.
Is it thinking?
Because I do. Yep. I think, therefore I am. Okay. That's it. That's how it works. And
end of thought, end of sentence. Gotcha. So
consciousness and emotions. You have a soul.
So I have another note from this scene that I've written down, which is, it's a shame that Pulaski isn't privy to any of this.
I know.
It bugs me so much. Do they send her an email after? But like, by the way, this crazy thing happened. Do you remember this guy?
Yep. Picard emails her.
Yeah.
It's great.
To whom it may concern.
I imagine after her saving his life, that Picard and Pulaski correspond regularly.
Yeah, I forgot that she does that. That's great that they give that to her and not Beverly.
Yeah. I mean, I think Beverly probably saves his life a couple times, too.
In different ways.
Sure.
But yeah, so then James Moriarty walks straight off the holodeck into the hall.
He doesn't disappear into nothingness like the book.
Yeah. And then the first thing Data does is go, we need a security detail.
Yeah.
Which is fair. And basically,
they get a security detail. Yeah, go ahead.
And then James is like, can you show me around? And Picard's like, yeah, I guess so. By the way, the three people that we've been interacting with are Data, Barclay, and Picard.
Yeah.
Why doesn't...
They do also take her, him. They take Moriarty to sick bay.
Yeah.
And have Dr. Crusher check him out.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, real. Mm.
As they're going, James has a great line. And he goes, when the security team comes, he goes, policemen, I'd recognize them in any century. Very fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
A little fun line. Why doesn't Data have a last name? Does he go by Data Soong at any point? Why doesn't Data choose to have a last name?
I don't know. He might.
What is
soul? Like, because Worf has a last name that he never uses.
Yeah. Right?
Commander Worf. Yeah. I mean, it's always Commander Worf, and it's not like Commander Rashenko. We never hear that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm assuming the out of universe is they came up with the name afterwards, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But like, why isn't, because Noonien Soong is the guy that made Data, and so why doesn't he adopt his creator's last name? Data Skywalker, how about that?
Yeah,
something we can all agree on.
So Moriarty's really excited to see the ship, and he's talking about like, what kind of seas are we on? And Picard's like, oh, brace yourself.
Let me just there's a lot of like boy acting from Picard in this one, and it's very funny.
Yeah.
Because he's given a lot of stuff like, he's like, I don't even know where to start.
Picard is also coming off of one of the worst experiences he's ever had to contend with.
Yeah.
The prior two episodes are when he has been kidnapped and tortured by the Cardassians. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
There are four lights.
Some capital A acting from Patrick Stewart in that moment.
Oh, it's great. Oh, it's so good. I mean, the stakes couldn't be higher.
Yeah.
So when if you're gonna do it, you got to do it in that moment or in a Shakespearean tragedy, and that's when you get to do that stuff.
100%. So they go to, I believe, 10 forward at one point.
They do. Yeah.
And I wasn't paying attention to what James Moriarty was saying, but I was paying attention to the background.
Sure.
And
do
you know how they do the stars?
How do they do the stars?
They have a big old black piece of cardboard that they post holes in, and they shine a big old light through it.
You know what?
And it looks great. I never questioned it for a minute. They did such a good job.
That is the lowest tech thing I've ever heard. I love it so much.
The same way the doors. Again, the doors are pulled by people. Like, it's so weird.
That's very funny.
But, in a review I was watching of some episodes of this, someone noted that, like, if you see with the HD and everything, you can see when, like, people are touching the console, sometimes they shake. So you could tell, like, they were, like, just trying to work with whatever budget they had, and it still works really well. Big fan.
That's great. Well, what they do say at 10 forward is that, you know, Picard's like, we're going to figure this out. And Moriarty's like, okay, but here's the other thing. There's one more thing.
Oh, right.
It's not just me.
I have a lady friend.
Yeah. And yeah, Picard tries to explain, like, well, I mean, listen, we don't even know exactly what you are, but you're already that. So we can't play with the moral implications of making another person into whatever you are. And he's like, yeah, but you're being mean because I want to go through life with my chosen lady.
You're being mean. That's so funny and so sweet, because where I went is like, you don't understand how good she is in this act, Picard.
I mean, and also the two actors that they have doing this are like,
could not be hornier.
Sure. Also, best of the best. Like, it's like watching Shakespeare.
Oh, I'm sorry. With the two of
them talking about them.
I'm sorry. I thought you meant referring to the Countess Regina, and truly unfortunate name to ever exist. And Moriarty. I thought you were talking because they're so horny. But yeah, no, Patrick and Dan are great.
And also horny. I don't know.
Yeah. I think.
Generally speaking.
Yeah, I would say so. There's certain level of intensity.
All the best performers are. Right?
Yeah. Speaking is, from experience. Of being one of the best performers alive.
And also being very horny.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm too functioned to horny. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. So they have a little meeting with the senior staff.
Yep.
And it is so hard not to just say everything that Ben Harrison and Adam Pranick say on Greatest Gen. Sure. Because it's so in my lexicon.
When you're done listening to this, go listen to Greatest Generation. I started.
No, you were right before. Go watch.
Oh, is it?
They love
watch?
Their viewers. No, it's not.
Okay.
But they call them their viewers.
That's
funny. Yeah.
I started it a while ago. I enjoyed it very much. But then I was like, I can't. Because the way the podcast app I use, it does first ones first, it'll play. So I would be going backwards. And man, I gotta find one that you can flip the chronological order.
Yeah, it's really annoying because I'm still working. I'm still catching up because they've started Voyager and we're still catching.
Gotcha.
I mean, yeah, they're like in mid-season two of Voyager and I'm still listening to the podcast in the last season of DS9. So, it's annoying.
Yep.
It really is, but it's a fun podcast. And so I just want to call everything what they call it.
Sure.
So.
So they have a manager meeting in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what they say other than, what should we do?
It really is. There's a lot of,
there's a lot of
hemming and hawing about the prime directive and stuff. I actually don't even know if they ever say the prime directive.
I don't
believe
they do.
It's all, every time there's some sort of Starfleet moral rule, I think it's like prime directive.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, which is, for those of you who don't know, means you can't interfere with any existing life or culture in as much as that might hamper their progress or change it too dramatically.
Yeah.
As
and
if we
I mean,
weren't brought here by aliens.
Right, of course. And I mean, the thing about this is that they can't really talk about it in terms of the Prime Directive because this is the holodeck and these are holograms. It's not a different planet or a different civilization, but it sort of is. So that's kind of how they're operating. Like, they're kind of trying to Prime Directive it when it's like, it's such a strange.
And isn't their whole new mission to seek out new life? So they did it. They didn't even have to leave the ship. Congrats. easy A.
So we get back to the bridge and Worf's hair is longer now. It's gotten a little longer.
But it's still very berries and cream.
Yeah.
By the way,
like
I will
super straight.
I will never not think that's the funniest thing I've ever said. Just so you know, I'm very proud of when I got there.
Oh, good. I'm so glad for you.
Yeah, thanks.
But Worf says that the controls aren't responding.
Yeah. Which, again, I love because, like, they give him the job of letting them know when there's been a security breach. Makes sense. But then they also, like, he's like, I don't know what to do. Because he's not, like, an engineer. It's just like, the computer is acting up. Can we get technical support on the phone?
Yeah.
Data, you're a computer. Can you talk to it? That is racist.
So then Picard tries to get the computer to behave, and it won't.
You naughty computer.
And computer says, nah. I will not. Access denied. And it's like, could you please tell me why?
Pretty please, and with a cherry on top.
And then, as if on cue, which he is, Moriarty appears and says, so I couldn't really wait. I didn't want to wait again, so I took control of the computer.
It should also be noted that they're in this region of space to view two planets colliding.
Yeah.
So they're racing against a clock because it's going to happen in 5 hours. And if they don't get far away enough from the planet, they'll be destroyed also.
Yeah. And he's like, well, better get on it then.
Yeah. He says something to the effect of, like, I've always found a deadline very helpful.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun as well, because it is a deadline for sure.
Oh, sure. In the most real sense of the word.
Yep.
So he's like, all right, figure this out.
Bye.
So there's a lot of discussion about it.
And basically what they end up doing is try to enhance the molecular compound of the holographic projections in the holodeck to try and beam them out using the transporter beam, because they use similar technology, to no avail. Charles Barkley is not his name. Reginald
nope.
Barkley.
Reginald Barkley.
Lieutenant Charles Barkley is in the holodeck, and he meets the Countess Regina, and she's very pleasant. And then Moriarty comes in and tongue kisses her. And and Reg is like, ugh. And he's like, you would understand if you knew her. And he's like, whatever. But there's some really great acting.
I do understand.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Because there is some really good acting from the guy that plays Reg. Because when the Countess is speaking with him, he's kind of like either really horny about her specifically, or like, yeah, why are you talking to me? And it fluctuates between those two. It's a beautiful performance of social awkwardness.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they try to transport a chair. It doesn't work. And then when Data is like, well, at least we can review the logs, then the logs don't exist. And he's like, now, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to Picard in engineering, who has just received access back to the computer. And Data throws something at Geordi, who catches it in his left hand. And basically they say, Geordi, get out of here. And he walks to a place in engineering we've never seen before. Because there's this desk that we often see that's like facing the warp core. And we never really see anyone leave to exit to the left of it. But that's where... That's where Geordi goes. And then behind a slat, never to be seen again. It's so strange. It was very jarring. Anyhow, basically Data has found out that Picard, Barkley, and himself are still on the holodeck. And Moriarty has created a false environment in order to get them to get them to work for him. And solve the problem in the holodeck and then bring it to the real world, which they're still locked out of.
Yep.
Which is
pretty genius.
Can I tell you, and I hate to do this, I do this so much, I was like, you know what would be cool? The first time I watched this episode, I was like, you know what would be interesting? If they were still in the holodeck. And what this means is I should write for Star Trek, is what this means.
That's what it means. Mm-hmm. That's what it means.
I got to get a story by. I should get a story by credit. Anyhow, so basically Jean-Luc is like, well, what do we do? And he's like, well, I mean, he's kind of forcing our hand because we can't communicate with a bridge. So I guess we have to just try to figure it out still.
Yeah.
Which is very similar to the position in which they were put in the last episode of, like, Moriarty's really good at getting them over a barrel.
Yeah. But, and this is a problem that, like, you know, if you buy all of it, it kind of makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they make it make enough sense within the world.
For sure.
That you're like, all right, that's wild, but okay.
Yeah.
Great.
There's a moment I forgot to mention when they're trying to get the transporter situation. Data says, please, which is like a very small thing. He goes, you know, engage the beam, please. And I'm like, that is such a small, nuanced change to denote that Data has become more human.
Oh, sure.
Because he would never in a million years say please or thank you in the first two seasons, I don't think, to my recollection.
I don't recall. It's been a while.
But it's just like, great. Now he knows social niceties in a way that at the beginning he didn't. It's just like a nice little character moment.
Yes.
And then also I wanted to note, throughout the entire episode, the cinematography in this is really great. There's some like zooming around. There's a lot of motion in this one, which I really appreciate. Like when Picard comes to when Data comes to engineering, they track him and then pull back, and then it's a two shot with Geordi and Jean-Luc. And so I'm like, oh wow, like they had some money to spend on the camera department, which is great. You know, well, talent and money aren't the equivalent, but you understand.
Yeah. So Jean-Luc has a chat with the Countess.
Already?
And, I mean...
Doesn't it? Okay, it cuts back to the real bridge at one point.
It does cut back to the bridge.
And Riker is at his peak because he's like... He yells so much in this episode, and I love it when Riker yells. He's like, just get him back. And it's just so good because there's like no not. He's so, again, he's so straightforward and such a guy. By the way, is Beyond Belief is the name of the show he hosts.
Yeah.
And I started watching it, and I remember watching it as a kid before I saw Star Trek. So when I saw Star Trek before, I'm like, oh, it's the Beyond the Belief guy.
Yeah.
Which is great. He also is apparently that he has had a show where he was talking about the greatest stories of the Bible. And I'm like, okay, so I have to watch that now because that's fascinating.
That is fascinating.
But yeah, so basically Moriarty is making the bridge aware of the whole situation that he has him in this trapped in, as he says, a ship in a bottle.
Yeah.
So there you go. You know, in the last one, the title was said as well, so way to go, team.
Yep. So now we go to the Countess and Picard, and he's saying, why do you like Moriarty? And she says, because
he's good in the sack.
So smart.
He's so smart. He's so smexy. Now, here's the thing. When Picard inquires, he says, I can tell you're a woman of good breeding. And I lost my mind. I said to myself, I was like, is he trying to... Now, two things. There's two options. Either Picard is trying to appeal to her, you know, 18th century sensibility. Right. With that. Which makes sense.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or they say that in Star Trek, which is a more interesting concept.
Yeah, I think it's the former. I would say it's the former.
I would imagine so, but it was just so weird. It was just so weird. He also does a really good job flirting with her, which is very fun to see Picard like, ooh.
And she's into it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically...
He's trying to get her to turn the voice command back over to him.
Yeah. Does it work? I don't remember.
No.
Okay. So basically they solve the problem. and they do so by...
So they agree to let them off, right?
Yeah, but I can't remember. Well, how do they solve the problem technologically? It's basically the same thing. They just enhance it somehow, right?
Well, they Just a second. We're on the bridge. We're talking about the planets.
Ugh, blah, 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 blah. Planets, who cares? Planets blow up all the time. You ever think about that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
A lot of the stars you see don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Just like so many lives touched by each other.
Yeah, I know. I actually do think about it a lot. But the Countess actually does try to convince Moriarty to return the controls to Picard. And he's like, no, I'm really not going to do it. Eventually, they pull up an arch. Moriarty pulls up an arch and talks to Riker. And Riker's like, listen, you're going to give us, we're going to return the controls over to you. And you're going to get us off the ship. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, sounds good. Sounds fantastic. We're going to do it my way. And how you're going to solve your problem is uncoupling some Heisenberg compensators. Like, they figure out the science stuff.
Yeah. Picard says to Lady Regina, this is what they need to do.
Right. Yeah. It's
more Cary Grant than anything. But yeah, so Moriarty's like, great, bet, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. So they've made this deal. They get off, they transport them, they beam them, basically.
Yes.
To the beaming room, the transporter room. And Moriarty's like, great.
This is the beam room. This is the beamery.
Yeah, the beamery. And I'm gonna give you back the ship. But first, you're gonna have to give me a runabout. And Riker's like, listen, that was not part of the deal. And he's like, now you're going to have to.
Very Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm. And once you do that, I promise. And basically, he does. Mm-hmm. He takes them, gives them a runabout, lets them sail off into the stars. And she says, can someday we return to Earth? He says, yeah, sure.
He says, of course, baby. And then Grease Lightning plays.
And then he returns controls, control of the computer to Picard.
So there's something in this shuttle bay that I loved, which is there's a sign over the door that says, caution, variable gravity area. Which totally makes sense. It makes sense that would be there. But much like in real world, I'm like, what incident occurred to demand that sign? Because, you know, sometimes you see, like, cautions and then something stupid. And you're like, okay, there's a story there. I want to know who floated away forever.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I love signs like that. Mm-hmm. Very specific signs. There's this one that floats around the internet. It's of a library drop box, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, when you drop off your book, please open the thing and scream, not a squirrel, so that we know you're dropping off a book and not trying a squirrel trying to eat our lunch.
That's very funny. That's very good.
This has occurred. Yeah. It's the best. So then we cut back to Picard and everybody. It's like, yeah. And they'll never know. They're still on the holodeck.
Yep, because Picard goes end program, then the shuttle bay dissolves.
Yeah.
And then they go back, and then they go back to the real bridge. But basically, they just did the same thing Moriarty did to him, which is great.
Yeah.
But they gave him enough data storage to basically explore the entire galaxy, which is great. So it's like a nice compromise.
Yeah, it is. It's also a little messed up.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so because Picard also poses this idea. He goes, what if we're just in a simulation, right?
Yeah.
And everyone looks at him like, dude, you can't be doing this. please stop. We already had such a big headache today. We almost died.
Yeah.
Don't lay this Matrix bullshit onto us. Pardon my French.
And then Barclay at the very end says, end program.
Yeah.
But, and then is relieved to see nothing happen. Like, oh no, we are really real in real life.
But can I say this?
We sing.
Bom, bom, bom. So it's very reminiscent to me of the Matrix, obviously. Because that's kind of, you know, that's the whole concept, right? Spoilers for a movie that came out in 1999. So recently with the new Matrix, Keanu was at a dinner of some director and he has some kids, and his kids, the director's kids, had never seen the Matrix. And he goes, okay, why don't you explain the Matrix to my young kids? And one of them is like a 4 or 5 year old. And he's like, yeah, he's trying to figure out whether or not it's real or fake and this sort of thing. And the kid goes, why? What does that matter? And he goes, Keanu's like, that's the best interpretation of the movie, actually. And that's how I feel about this episode. It's like, well, what it doesn't matter. Why do we need to know that? What good would that do us?
Exactly. So what good did this episode do you?
I still prefer it over the previous one. Mostly because it's less gimmicky and more like an actual episode of Star Trek. Again, Daniel Davis is an excellent performer. Everyone's good at acting. Again, the moment they realize
everyone's good at acting
on the show. The moment where they dismiss Geordi, the face LeVar Burton does, this blank thing he does, just, and then like wanders off into the void, is like it haunting. It's a thing of nightmares, because you can tell, like, he does such a good job of like, oh, now that the audience knows I'm not real, I can just like turn it off. It's very interesting. I like that Data solves it using deductive reasoning again, which is great. Nice little nod. But yeah, it's far more enjoyable. I'd say it's definitely one that sticks out in my mind. Revisiting it, I didn't enjoy it as much as I initially did, just probably because I've seen it before. So like, I'm going to give it like a 4, 4.5 out of 5, though, because it's one when people go, what's one of your favorites? I'm like, it's this one. Because it also does actually, as much as I was playing around, it does beg the question, what is a soul?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Actually,
what is even reality?
Yeah. And I'm like, that's fun to think about for exactly 45 minutes and then put away.
Right. Because you can't think about it for that long. You just got to live your life.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4. It's a really good episode of Star Trek. You know, we know that these Moriarty episodes are not murder mysteries. They're just, around the theme with the characters of a Sherlock. So,
a Sherlock.
Not rating it on that. Yeah. A Sherlock. It makes, it's well written. It makes sense. It's very acty.
Sure. Yeah. There's a lot of.
There's a lot of like concept and like problem solving going on, and like two actors sitting there and hashing it out. It's great. Very, very Star Trek. Yep. Like,
I would call this
we love a moral conundrum.
Yes. Yes. I would call this S tier Star Trek. You know, this is like in the best of the best, I think.
It's really good. It's not personally one of my very favorites, but I really like it quite a lot. Mm-hmm.
I really like Barclay and Moriarty. Specifically, Daniel Davis's just performance is very good, and I enjoy it very much.
And that's excellent.
A huge part. And it's also, it's interesting watching something from season 2 and then season 6 immediately back to back, because even Picard has grown so much. Of like, he's far better at negotiating now. And seeing that, and seeing like the thing with Data and this sort of stuff, like it's very cool to see the growth even just within these like two little snapshots, and even the growth of Moriarty to a certain point.
Right.
And also I do love the compromise. I love that he gives James what he can, like, and
right,
he does kind of just justify it with like, oh, we could be in a simulation too, and then kind of walks off, but
he gives him a lie.
Yeah, but you know,
yeah,
is all God all powerful or all good?
Right,
you know, is it a mercy to it's a merciful gesture, I think, in Picard, and it's also one done out of kindness. And I think that's really beautiful. And like, it's, he does lie to him, but it's out of a kind thing to do. And I think that's, you know, not to get too morally relevant, I think the ends justify the means.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think so too.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit mind twisty.
A little bit. And I'll also say this, it's interesting looking at, because this is more mysterious than the other one, I feel like. It's closer to a, have to solve a problem, which is different than a mystery, despite it, like, being essentially the same thing. It's interesting that the vibe is so different.
Right. And I mean, Tristan and I talked a lot about which episodes we would actually do, because if you're gonna really get into the weeds of it, isn't every episode of Star Trek a mystery? Kind of a bit, deal. Yeah. But
the pen pal.
But
one,
yeah, we're sure. But we're gonna we did these because they are in the Sherlock Holmes averse.
Yes, precisely.
And then we'll do some Deep Space Nine for you that are actual murder mysteries.
Closer, I think we mentioned last time, closer to CSI than like Poirot.
Yeah.
But still murder mysteries.
Yes, but with a Star Trek.
With a Star Trek.
Flair.
That would be a fun show. I actually was going to, like, I was going to do a script competition last year, and my concept was Poirot, but in space.
Yeah.
And that would be really fun. Someone should get on that. Not me, though. I quickly realized I don't have the capacity to do this.
Well, there you go.
But someone, you can take it. Just credit me.
Hey.
Give me, what a gift. Again, give me a story by.
Yeah. All right. We'll take you to a space station next time.
Yeah. I don't even remember what episode you're going to suggest, but I hope Quark's in it. He's my favorite.
Quark's in almost all of the episodes.
I think so.
He's probably at least in it.
Ugh, I love Quark so much. Little gremlin man.
I think there's three episodes.
Okay.
At least two.
That are...
There's one in the first season.
Okay.
So that'll be fun. Okay. Yeah, we'll do that one. It's like an old murder that he has to go back and solve from during the Cardassian occupation.
I recall now, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the he I'm referring to is Tristan's least favorite character.
No, not my least favorite character, just a character that doesn't work. I have far least characters that I don't want to get into.
Many lesser characters? Fair enough.
I don't want to get into because I run a Kalis account and they can spam me now.
Oh, like, yeah, sure.
This idiot doesn't even like redacted. But yeah, Odo doesn't work for me, which is fine.
Yep. But we got to watch an Odo episode if we're going to do the murder mystery.
We do.
Don't worry. The other one I'm positive is a Dax episode. So
I do like Dax.
You'll like that better.
I do like Dax. All right. For that, I now call the meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to order. I mean done.
Close.
Disorder. Call it to disorder. Make it so.